recognition, but I also think that it's important to recognize the decision on the part of the FARC. Their role in all of this has been very, very important from the beginning, and their reaction, in fact, to the defeat of the referendum has also, in my view, been very important. They've stated over and over again that they do not want to return to war, that they are committed to peace. So I think it would have been better, in my view, if the award had been granted to both President Santos and to Rodrigo Londoño, the head of the FARC. Mm.
And finally, less than half of the population voted. What was it, maybe 40%? What is your sense if more people had been involved?
Well, it's hard to say, but I think that there's in very specific issues that you can look at. The fact is that the Hurricane Matthew that is now hitting the coast of the United States was just beginning in the Caribbean, and the day of the vote, the whole northern coast of Colombia was swamped by rain, and so the voter turnout was the lowest, precisely on the Atlantic coast. Well, that area voted overwhelmingly for the yes, but if the voter turnout had been just the same degree that it had been throughout the country, maybe the vote would have been different.
Daniel Garcia Pena, we want to thank you for being with us. Colombia's High Commissioner for Peace from 1995 to 98, professor of political science at National University in Bogota, and founder of Planet Peace. That does it for our show. Again, a note about Sunday night, the night of the second debate. It will be a town hall. We will be broadcasting from 8 Eastern Standard Time until 11:30, a roundtable discussion. Then we'll break the sound barrier by having Jill Stein answer the same questions put to the major party candidates. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of AFFECT, a community event about the work, culture, and design of social change. The conference will take place October 7th and 8th at the Ziba Auditorium in Portland. AFFECT will feature talks from Spawn on Me creator and podcaster Khalif Adams, Ferguson activist and social impact designer Dee Nichols, Nadia Gathers from Code 2040, and many more. Again, that's AFFECT, October 7th and 8th at the Ziba Auditorium, 810 Northwest Marshall Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Friends of Noise Benefit Show on Sunday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Friends of Noise formed to create more opportunities for youth to produce, perform, and gather at all-ages music shows and raise awareness for the need of an all-ages venue. Performing at this benefit will be Explode Into Colors, Vampire, and Hugo Berlin. Again, that's Friends of Noise Benefit Show, Sunday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland, presenting a forum on Portland and Multnomah County ballot measures on Monday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah County Building Boardroom, 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. More voter information at lwvpd.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, chaos ensued at yesterday's city council meeting in Portland when speakers were not allowed to comment on the pending police union contract.
15 Oregon counties are suing the state over timber revenues.
and a video of the Republican candidate for President Donald Trump bragging about sexually molesting women in 2005 has been released by The Washington Post.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 7th, 2016. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Jenka Soderberg. Chaos ensued at yesterday's city council meeting in Portland when police accountability activists were forced by an apparently illegal public hearing system to couch their analysis within a discussion of bridge cranes. Mayor Charlie Hales has for the past 2 weeks struggled to bring the Portland Police Union contract negotiations to a close without public testimony or even input by the Independent Police Review Division. On Wednesday, Mayor Hales put City Hall on lockdown when members of the public arrived for testimony. There were two arrests, and the discussion and vote were put off until Thursday. On Thursday, Mayor Hales put together a complicated plan for public access to City Hall that left most watchers in a room across the street and allowed people into city chambers one at a time. Because Hales insisted that no one was allowed to discuss the police union contract, activists tried to hide their testimony within an agenda item about a new city bridge crane.
For the hearing this afternoon, because we're taking action on the rest of the council calendar, you're free to testify on the item before us that you've signed up for. You must speak only to the subject at hand and to no other subject. If you speak to some other subject, I'll rule you out of order and ask you to sit down. If you don't sit down, I will ask you to leave the chambers, and if you don't leave the chambers, you'll be excluded. I'm going to warn each of the folks that signed up for multiple items this afternoon, because it might be the case that people signed up thinking they could talk about other subjects, and this one's about a crane. So you're free, Mr. Handelman, to speak about the crane and only about the crane.
Mayor, I feel it's very unusual. The other people who are testifying on this can't hear my testimony, so they don't know what I've already said. This makes
you're
it not a public
hear
hearing
the
anymore.
Room. Yeah.
So I'm hoping they can hear what I'm saying. Is there something said? No, because they walked over here with me. So they can't hear what I'm saying now unless they're let into the chamber.
We're not going to have multiple people in the room today, so you're free to speak about the crane.
All right. Well, my name is Dan Handelman. I'm with Portland Cop Watch, and we're glad to testify about the purchase of the inspection crane. We're a little disturbed that it was taken out of numerical order, as the charter says that items are supposed to be taken on the agenda, and that this meeting was called with less than 24-hour notice, as state law requires. It's good to keep the record open during a first reading of an agenda item to allow public testimony. We wonder why council felt the need to put the public out of another room to testify about the bridge crane. We also wonder if the mayor's staff lobbied the neighborhood associations to support the bridge crane and became indignant when the neighborhood associations refused to do so. We wonder if those staffers called people who oppose a bridge crane not helpful. It also isn't clear whether the bridge crane purchase will leave important public policy issues to like body cameras in the hands of the police instead of the public and city council, although your modification to that other agenda item might have dealt with that issue. Did the auditor and IPR director come out
Mr.
in opposition Handelman. To the bridge crane?
You're off topic,
I'm
Mr.
talking
Handelman.
About the bridge crane.
No, sir. You're talking
I'm
about the
talking
auditor
completely
and IPR.
About,
Mr. Handelman.
Listen to the record. Every sentence I have
yeah,
said
I know.
Is
you're
about
very
the
cleverly
crane.
Constructing sentences to conclude the well, word bridge crane, but we're not going to discuss IPR. We're
well,
just talking about whether we should buy this crane or not.
This.
Mr. Handelman, the subject before the council is only do we buy the crane
I'm still talking about the bridge crane.
Only that subject.
Yeah. Do bridge crane operators now have more than 48 hours to review reports and footage before they
Mr.
have
Handelman,
to be interviewed?
I'm ruling you out of order. Thank you. Please sit down. You're out. You're out of order. Have a seat. Okay?
Okay, so Teresa Rayford is next.
Okay, Ms. Rayford, welcome. You're welcome to speak on this item and only on this item. If you raise any other subject, I will rule you out of order and you'll need to leave the chambers.
Then you need to clarify to me what that means.
That means if you talk about anything other than whether the council should or should not purchase this bridge crane, I will rule you out of order.
And so what would that sound like if I said anything that was relative to
For
anything
example,
other?
If you raise,
anything like what, Charles?
If you raise the subject of other city bureaus other than the Transportation Bureau that's buying this crane.
Okay, and so we're talking about the city purchasing property
the Transportation
to build.
Bureau.
Right, the Department of Transportation
correct.
Or the Transportation Bureau with the City of Portland?
That's correct.
Okay, and so bridge crane. In regards to purchases made by the city or any bureaus within the city, I think that everybody's relativity to the outcomes or the return of investment should be included in that. So when we as a city spend money on things like bridge cranes or public safety or any other things that would improve the life of our community, we need to have those policies to include the voices of the people on all forms. Any money spent, bridge crane money, or any other money spent by any other bureaus to bring public safety or transportation support needs to be included with people's comments, not subjected to, let's say, oppressive policy that is not mandated. I don't know where me being able to say things outside of bridge crane would violate anybody's tolerance of me having anything else to say when I was listed to make testimony on earlier items, but I was not available to do that because of your process. It's out of order, but bridge crane is something that we're supposed to be talking about. And so when we talk about the items that are on the journal or on the agenda here, let's go ahead and talk about how everybody should be included in understanding how those items, those purchases, are going to benefit all of us. A bridge crane bought in the city of Portland, I'm hoping that the management and the operations of the companies that are vendors in this partnership include a lot of minorities. I hope that the outcomes of that process does not include the opportunity to hire more officers to hurt people that come around that property. I hope that if I go anywhere near a bridge crane, that I'm not assaulted or murdered by a police officer in this city.
Rayford, you're veering away from the subject.
I hope that the bridge cranes have safety measures around them to protect all citizens. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because right now, I don't think that there's any policy in place that would make sure that we're safe if we, you know, decide to go look at bridge cranes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll take the next person, please.
Mr. Malcolm Craddock.
Bridge crane. I think that this process is flawed. Bridge crane. I think that you guys are out of order. Bridge crane. I really think that you guys should be shut down. Bridge crane. I think that this city council has lost its way. That's what I think. And bridge crane. The police accountability stuff, you're out of order. Bridge crane. Your police so-called reforms, you're just trying to cover things up.
You're now going into another subject.
Oh, am I? Well, yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, because you lied to us. I can lie to you.
I'm not.
You know what?
To you,
bridge crane. You guys are so wrong. You're pushing people out onto the street corners instead of taking care of them. You're making contracts to cover up police misconduct.
Mr. You're out of order, Mr. Craddock. You're out of order. Please leave.
That was testimony at yesterday's city council meeting in Portland about a bridge crane when the police union contract was taken off the table for the participants to discuss. The final vote for the new police contract is scheduled for next Wednesday's council session.
The Portland Mercury reports that a 14-year-old repeatedly groped by two 30-year-old white males at an all-ages hip-hop concert has drawn a rare comment from the concert venue. The Mercury updated their story yesterday with a second teenage girl's testimony that she was groped by the same 30-year-old men who she writes, quote, had been targeting multiple underage girls throughout the night, unquote. The show by hip-hop artist Danny Brown was at the Roseland. Its owners published a rare comment on their Facebook page. It said, quote, to all patrons of our show, if you are looking for somewhere to prey upon young women, or women of any age for that matter, or men, no one is immune to sexual harassment. Do not attend our shows. We do not want your ticket sales, and we do not want you in the crowd, unquote. The Portland Mercury was the media sponsor of the show. It was part of the publication's concert series specifically intended for underage audiences. The Mercury also made a rare statement. Quote, the Mercury would like to spread awareness of these types of incidents, which are 100% not okay. So if you have something you'd like to share, even anonymously, please contact us at music@portlandmercury.com.
A video of Republican candidate for President Donald Trump bragging about sexually molesting women in 2005 has been released by The Washington Post. It is an interview with a reporter from the show Access Hollywood several months after Trump married his wife, Melania. The conversation included the GOP presidential contender suggesting crudely that he has grabbed women by the genitalia and that if you are, quote, a star, then, quote, you can do anything. He says on the tape that he never hesitates to, quote, kiss beautiful women, saying, I don't even wait. Trump then comments on the body of the actress who films a scene with him by referencing an act of defecation. The comments have been called by commentators epically revolting. The Post reports that the film was made in a, quote, private moment while Trump and a few men were together waiting for a casting call in a backstage bus. The man who eggs Trump on in the conversation from 11 years ago is Today Show co-host Billy Bush. After the Trump tape was revealed, Bush's social media blew up with thousands of outraged insults from former fans. Good thing for you, it's Friday, one commenter says, doubting you'll be on the Today Show when Monday comes around.
During yesterday's gubernatorial debate in Eugene, Dr. Bud Pierce apologized to Governor Kate Brown for his unsympathetic comments on domestic violence. He declared that his comments had created a crisis for his campaign. During an earlier debate with Brown, he had said that, in his experience, educated, well-off women are not susceptible to domestic violence. The statement came after Brown had revealed that she had been a victim of domestic violence. Pierce's comment created an immediate uproar and led to the resignation of his communications director. Yesterday was the third time that Pierce apologized for his controversial comment. He said, quote, I take full responsibility and ownership of what I said. Governor Brown thanked him for his apology. After the apology, the two candidates continued the debate. Topics included Oregon Measure 97, the underfunding of the state's public employment retirement system, and the possible need for a statewide sales tax at some point in the future.
15 Oregon counties have been given the go-ahead for a $1.4 billion class action lawsuit against the state of Oregon. The lawsuit alleges that the state has not honored timber harvest levels that were agreed to in the 1930s and 40s. The counties claim that they turned over ownership of local forests with the expectation that the state would maximize timber revenues. They maintain that since 1998, the state has prioritized conservation goals over sustainable harvest levels. As a result, the counties claim they were deprived of revenue they needed to fund basic services. Although the lawsuit has been brought in the name of Linn County, the litigation will proceed as a class action suit, including 14 additional Oregon counties. The actual cost of the litigation is not being absorbed by the counties. Legal costs are being paid for by timber groups and lumber companies, including the Oregon Forest and Industries Council, the Sustainable Forests Fund, Stimson Lumber, and Hampton Tree Farms. The trial is expected to begin in early 2017.
Listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather, cloudy with temperatures in the low 70s. East of the Cascades, morning clouds giving way to sun, with highs near 75 degrees. On this date in 1991, University of Oklahoma law professor Anita Hill accused Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of making sexually inappropriate comments when she worked for him. Thomas denied the allegations. At the time, Senator Joe Biden said, "Sexual harassment is a serious matter, and in my view, any person guilty of this offense is unsuited to serve not only on the nation's highest court, but in any position of responsibility in or out of government."
Hurricane Matthew tore through eastern Florida early this morning. The Category 3 storm has sustained winds of 120 miles per hour. The storm is now running parallel to the coast, moving steadily to the northwest. The storm has left over 1 million Floridians without power. On Tuesday, Hurricane Matthew battered Haiti, leaving over 800 people dead and more than 300,000 in temporary shelters. Many of the hardest hit areas are remote, and the death toll is expected to rise as rescue workers finally make their way in. UNICEF noted that this is the worst humanitarian crisis to hit Haiti since the 2010 earthquake that killed over 200,000 people. FSRN's Nell Abrams has more.
More than 3 million people are under evacuation orders in three southeastern United States Friday as Hurricane Matthew slowly churns along the east coast of Florida. The storm left a wake of destruction in Haiti, where rescue workers and residents are still digging out and counting the dead. Official estimates are slow to emerge, but media reports put the death toll at more than 500. The hurricane struck Haiti as a Category 4 Tuesday. Many Haitians still live in makeshift structures and tent camps 6 years after a 7.0 earthquake killed 200,000 people. Aerial photographs show entire towns now nearly wiped out by the hurricane, and humanitarian aid groups expect the damage to be broad and the threat of a cholera resurgence high. The waterborne disease killed thousands of people in the aftermath of the 2010 earthquake, and public health officials predict another wave of the deadly infection to follow the hurricane. Wednesday, after a briefing at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, President Barack Obama urged everyone still in the storm's path to heed evacuation orders and have emergency plans and supplies in place.
Even as we prepare for the hurricane here at home, I want us to keep in mind that Haiti, one of the poorest countries in the world, already suffering from a range of previous disasters, has been hit really hard by this storm, and we anticipate that they are going to need substantial help.
At least 500,000 people were without power in Florida Friday morning. Emergency officials announced curfews in counties across central and northeast portions of the state as residents in Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina prepare for the onslaught. Matthew is one of two hurricanes currently active in the Atlantic. For FSRN, I'm Nell Abram.
Earlier today, the United States government officially accused Russia of attempting to interfere with U.S. elections. The charges were made by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and the Department of Homeland Security. A joint statement from the two agencies noted that the U.S. intelligence community was confident that the Russian government directed the recent hacking of emails of American citizens, including political organizations. Russian President Vladimir Putin was not specifically identified in the statement. President Obama is said to be considering a range of possible responses, including limited economic sanctions and covert operations against Russian servers. The charges are the latest in a series of actions of escalating tensions between Washington and Moscow on a broad range of issues.
Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize Friday for his aborted effort to end the country's 52-year-old armed conflict. The announcement comes just days after Colombian voters narrowly rejected the peace deal between the government and FARC rebels. In the referendum, a majority of eligible voters abstained from casting a ballot on the peace accord that took 4 years of negotiations to reach. What comes next is anyone's guess, as even the two long-warring parties say neither had a plan B for what polls predicted would be certain victory in favor of the peace deal. FSRN's Andalusia Knoll has more from Bogota, Colombia.
The announcement that Colombian voters had rejected the peace accords by a fraction of a percent brought both opponents and supporters to the streets. Some in celebration and some in mourning. In Bogota's main square, Plaza Bolívar, people could be seen arguing publicly about the road forward. With tears welling in his eyes, Elias Heruega, an indigenous Makuna man who voted yes, recalled the violence his community has suffered during the Western Hemisphere's longest-running conflict.
They killed my family, my older brother and younger brother. The guerrillas killed 37 people right in front of my eyes, right in front of my family. Voting for a president who was going to support the violence, we didn't vote twice for Mr. Uribe so that through violence he would solve our problems. He went towards the rural areas and destroyed our communities, our reserves, our riches, and they killed our people, and then became owners of our land. We have to get past this kind of thought. No more war. The war just brings death, desolation, hunger. We deserve something better. New experiences, new lives.
A geographic analysis of the plebiscite results shows that voters from violence-ravaged communities overwhelmingly backed the courts. But Guillermo Villaseñor of the human rights organization Witness for Peace says this defeat at the polls cannot detain the peace process.
This plebiscite narrowly lost, and the people who have been most impacted by this conflict voted very strongly in favor of the accords. And many folks in social movements and human rights organizations campaigned for this plebiscite. So I have a lot of faith that despite this setback, that the arc of history bends towards justice.
The night after the referendum, a few hundred university students and ordinary citizens gathered to hold a popular assembly in favor of peace in a park in Bogota.
Buenas noches. Para los que no me conocen, mi nombre es José Antequera.
José Antequera's father was a leading member of the Unión Patriótica, a leftist political party that emerged in the 1980s following a peace process similar to the one recently negotiated between the government and the FARC. Hundreds of this party's members, Antequera's father among them, were assassinated in a politically motivated extermination campaign. Many more fled into exile. As a young human rights lawyer, José Antequera has become a leading advocate for the rights of victims of the Civil War. He notes that the largely Afro-Colombian community of Bohoya, site of an infamous massacre, voted 96% in favor of the peace accord.
I wasn't surprised at all that the majority there voted yes. I know people in Bohoya and know that more than just the population, there's a social movement for peace, absolutely aware of what happened to them, that their tragedy is a product of a conflict and its disintegration. In this sense, there are people completely dedicated to peace, to the point that they've carried out acts of conciliation and public pardons with the FARC in their territory.
Antequera says it's essential that people in the urban areas less affected by the war try to understand the situation of rural Colombians.
There's a huge disconnect in our country. The peace process is an opportunity to break this disconnect, and we continue to walk this path so that people in the cities can be aware of the fact that the war affects populations and territories that, perhaps far-flung, are part of our country and that we're all Colombians.
In a way, the referendum results are an illustration of the entrenched polarization that has fueled the armed conflict and associated violence. But many here are not ready to surrender their hopes for peace to a referendum whose margin of victory was a fraction of a percentage point. On Wednesday, tens of thousands of young people marched in Bogota to demand continuity of the peace process. Among them was Jennifer Maria Cortero, whose uncle is one of the 25,000 people disappeared during the armed conflict.
I'd like to tell everyone who doesn't have faith in this process that there's always a first step, and this time victims were taken into consideration in the crafting of these accords. For the first time, victims of forced disappearances were taken into account with a demand to create a special investigation unit to search of our loved ones. Because if we find them, we'll know the truth and there will be justice. But if none of this happens, there will never be neither truth nor justice, and our families will remain always invisible to politicians and parties and groups on the fringes of the law.
In Havana, the chief negotiators for both sides will continue to meet and see if they can hammer out modifications to the accord that a broader majority can agree on. Andalusia Noll, FSRN, Bogota.
Now the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
Workers' Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here is urging a national boycott of all businesses Donald Trump owns, has invested in, or has partnered with until Trump honors his legal duty to bargain with the union workers At Trump Hotel Las Vegas, the Boycott Trump campaign urges customers not to stay at Trump hotels or play at his golf courses. A majority of workers at Trump's hotel in Las Vegas voted to join a union after an anti-union campaign by Trump management. The hotel has yet to start bargaining with the workers for a first labor contract as required by U.S. labor law. The Allina nurses' strike in Minnesota is turning into what may become the longest nursing strike in state history. 4,800 nurses are still on the picket lines after rejecting Allina's latest offer. A picket sign called that offer, "New Lipstick, Same Pig." Nurse Angela Bichetti is on the bargaining team for the Minnesota Nurses Association at Allina. She says this strike is financially costly for Allina, so it's clearly not just about money. Nurses are convinced it's about trying to bust their union and neutralize their voice for patients.
All about the money. This would have been figured out a long time ago. The nurses feel like this is about their voice and their power. They need to stick up and fight for their patients. Yeah, they're trying to take our voice away and bust the union, and these nurses are fighting up against it.
Untold numbers of American workers are facing an illegal, systematic imposition of forced arbitration agreements from employers that strip workers of their legal rights. These are presented to workers as conditions of employment, and the practice is widespread. But these are illegal under the National Labor Relations Act. Jennifer Fultz was fired from her job with Alorica for refusing to sign one of these illegal arbitration agreements. She's fighting back with a labor attorney in a case filed with the National Labor Relations Board, and she's determined to get justice. And she's urging other workers who are confronted with these forced arbitration documents to fight back too.
If you're an employee and you feel that your rights are being violated, don't hesitate to stand up. Don't hesitate to reach out to an employment attorney.
Even though they are making record profits, Aetna and UnitedHealth Healthcare are leaving the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Nurse Talk Radio Healthcare in America correspondent Donna Smith says in Aetna's case, it looks like retribution for a federal government probe into a proposed big merger. The government is looking into the merger to make sure antitrust laws are not being broken.
Well, Aetna didn't like that, and they were very out front about it. They said that because they were being denied their opportunity to merge, that they felt like they couldn't make the kind of profits that they want to make, and therefore they weren't going